Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When Moby recorded this song, The Last Day, for his 2013 album, Innocence, I don't think too many of us took the title literally. I mean, it's just a song, right? Well, as it turns out, no. The Last Day really did happen in 2012. We are now living in a post-apocalyptic world, and Moby has the photographic proof. His new exhibit of photographs, also called Innocence, is up and running at the Emanuel Freeman Gallery here in New York through December 30th. And Moby joins us here in the Soundcheck studio. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you too.
So it's a provocative idea that the apocalypse has in fact happened and we just have kind of failed to notice.
It's a tricky thing for me to talk about, or rather it's a tricky thing for me to talk about briefly. Also, because I find as I get older, I become like Grandpa Simpson. Like my stories just get longer and longer. And then suddenly you look around and you realize the people you're talking to have just stopped paying attention a long time ago. But so basically, if you remember a few years ago, there was supposedly the Mayan apocalypse.
Exactly.
December 21st, 2012, the world was going to change. And a lot of my hippie friends woke up on December 22nd, very disappointed that the world hadn't in fact changed. And I thought to myself, well, if you think of like steering an ocean liner, you know, you could do like a radical spin on the wheel of an ocean liner and you wouldn't notice a change because it'd be very gradual. Mm-hmm. And I figure like the Earth is a lot bigger than an ocean liner. And I stopped to sort of like gain some objective perspective on the world in which we live. And I started thinking, okay, we have a progressive African-American president. Our next president will most likely be a wonderful progressive woman. The world is generally, a lot of the world is moving in a more rational direction. And then there's a part of the world that's moving in a more sort of like atavistic, fear-based direction. Mm. And so I started thinking, maybe the apocalypse is rather like an unfolding as opposed to like one big boom event. And then the more I thought about this, the more I thought, well, there is quite a lot of evidence to support the idea that there is this very benign apocalypse unfolding and we're a part of it.
So did this come to you at the same time that you were doing the songs for the album Innocence? I mean, the photo exhibit and the album have the same name.
Yeah. I was writing the music for the album, and it's a very collaborative album.
Right.
Which had a sort of like a warmth to it that some of the other music I've made didn't have, because it wasn't quite as monastic as some of the other records I've made.
So it was Skylar Grey singing on
and
The Last Day.
And Wayne Coyne and Cold Specs and a whole bunch of people. But then I started thinking about 9/11, and because I, you know, was on Mott Street when September 11th happened. And apart from all the horrifying aspects of 9/11, from a semiotic perspective, one of the most interesting things for me was that after 9/11, people would take pictures of banal things in lower Manhattan, and somehow suddenly they had all this relevance and meaning.
Yeah.
You know, like you take a picture of milk in a deli on September 10th, and it was just a dumb picture of milk. Take that same milk in the same deli below Chambers Street on September 12th, and suddenly people like gave it so much extra meaning. And so that also kind of informed the photo show. So I went around LA and took pictures of things that could be perceived as either just banal or evidence of the apocalypse. And then, to make it more interesting, I invented a cult.
The cult of the innocents, and I will quote you here. They first appeared in the seconds after the apocalypse when the eschatological dust was still settling. Good use of the word eschatological. The eschaton, death, judgment, heaven, and hell.
Yeah, so eschatology would be the study basically of the end of times.
Yeah, the four last things, yeah. Bringing with them, this is the cult, bringing with them their silence and their shame as represented in sacrifice and concealment. And here's where things get creepy, because everyone in this cult is wearing a white robe and a mask of some sort, many of them animal masks.
Yeah. So, and the idea there is they're hiding. You know, they're sort of ashamed at what we as a species have done for the last 2,000 years. But did you ever see the Source Family documentary?
No.
Okay. There was this health food restaurant in L.A. in the 60s called The Source, and it was like one of the first trendy health food restaurants. You know, Goldie Hawn and Jack Nicholson would eat there. And the man who ran it developed sort of messianic ideas, And he reinvented himself as a cult leader. And eventually, of course, he proclaimed himself God and impregnated all his followers, well, the female followers.
Right.
But because it was Southern California in the early 70s, they were really stylish and very well documented. So they wore these beautiful robes and they're like these 20-year-old gorgeous hippies. And so I thought, like, if there is a Southern Californian post-apocalyptic cult, there's going to be some drama to it because it's California and that's, you know, people don't, you know, they're actors and they're set designers. So that sort of also informed this cult that I invented.
And that in turn informs the whole kind of visual world in which the album Innocence unfolded, the cover art, the videos that went with it. The song A Case for Shame, I mean, you know, is that sort of directly related to the silence and the shame of this cult?
I mean, I guess in this era where people don't really buy records, there has to be a compelling reason to make a record. And when I work on a record, I work under the assumption that very few people are actually going to buy it or listen to it in its entirety. So I have to sort of really enjoy the process of making it and be really happy with sort of like a concept. So for the album and the art show and the all the photographs and the videos, I just sort of created a world that I found really interesting, perfectly happy with the idea that very few people would ever pay attention to it. So in creating this world, this record, this art show, this whatever, mainly just it just seemed interesting to me.
We're speaking with Moby. His last album was Innocence, and Innocence is also the name of the photo exhibition running through December 30th at the Emanuel Freeman Gallery on West 27th Street here in New York. This song, A Case for Shame, features vocals by the singer who goes by the name Cold Specs.
A fine line will set you apart. Swallow my name, swallowing down. Sing me a song. Shook the breeze, shaking my head.
Shame is from Moby's last record called Innocence. That's Innocence with TS at the end, as opposed to the CE version. Featuring Cold Specs on that song, A Case for Shame. You did the video for this yourself. It's clearly a part of the record, the recording. Is it also a part of the exhibit?
Oh, yeah. It's part of this strange post-apocalyptic cult world that I've kind of invented. I mean, in a way, I guess the concept is you sort of create sort of externally supported ideas and a world around them and then sort of see what flows from that.
Right. You know,
it's almost like, I guess, like a David Lynchian approach to things, like create Twin Peaks, you know, and then see what happens.
Right.
You know, I'm not in any way comparing myself to the genius of David Lynch, but
with
it seems
like...
worked. Yeah, we've worked on a bunch of... He directed a video for me. I DJed at his wedding. So it begs the question, like, people always ask me, like, what do you play at David Lynch's wedding? I was like, well, you play Brown Eyed Girl and Beyonce because that's what all the people there want to hear. You know, David Lynch might want to hear, you know, crazy pitch down backwards Tuvan throat singing with tons of reverb and delay, but clearly his aunts and uncles and his cousins don't want to hear that.
So as you look at the... as you look at this exhibit of the photos that document this post-apocalyptic world, a lot of them are, you were saying this before, very quotidian, very kind of banal, day-to-day, you know, a guy in a dog mask, maybe it's a woman in a dog mask, in an aisle of a grocery store.
Yeah.
So what's the message there? What are you saying about those activities and those moments in our lives?
Part of it is, and this is where I have to sort of edit myself a little bit so I don't sound too much like just a pretentious grad student. But a lot of it is just semiotics. you know, and the role of signifiers. Like, we look at that particular image, it's, and the way it's printed, it's actually printed about 6 feet by 9 feet. So
wow.
It's really sort of like, when you look at it, it's kind of huge and immersive. But there's so much in it that's so banal. You know, it's this person standing in the pet food aisle of a supermarket, and that's, it's quotidian, banal. But then there's this odd, dislocated person in a monkey mask and a sheet just standing still in the middle of this aisle. And what I love is that there's no, like, I, as the artist or photographer, I'm not leading anyone to any sort of, like, narrative conclusions.
Mm.
I'm just creating this odd sort of tableau, and hopefully it's a little discomfiting or disconcerting, and then people bring to it what they will.
Right. And neurologists are telling us these days that the brain will try and, you know, it'll work overtime if it has to make sense of, to provide a story or a link.
Neurologically, we love creating meaning and compartmentalization. And so when you provide two, let's say in this particular case, like a supermarket and this person, this sort of scary looking person in the middle of it, like, it's two things that our brain is not accustomed to cohabitating.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sort of almost creates this cognitive dissonance. At least that's the goal. Or someone might look at it and just say, oh, there's a guy in a monkey mask in a supermarket.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, my intention might fall flat completely. I don't know.
Well, you know, another of the songs from the album, Innocence, the video for Almost Home, mm-hmm. is a kind of similar thing. It just follows a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
You wrote, you called it, quote, the best video ever made involving a stuffed animal on an airplane for a budget of $10 or less. What did you even spend the 10 bucks on?
The less part. So it's actually, I think the budget, because basically I was flying from New York to L.A., and before I left my apartment, I found this crummy little stuffed animal that I don't know how I'd ended up with, and I just shot it basically on my camera phone. And so I got to LA and, like, just pretended that this little stuffed animal was making this transcontinental journey to go see some friends. And that's the entire super simple video. So I guess I did shoot Damien Jurado.
Mm-hmm. Who's the guest vocalist.
Yeah. And we met in the middle of Hollywood. So I guess I did have to drive there. So there's probably like 75 cents in gas to go meet Damien Jurado. So let's say the total budget was about 75 cents.
Okay. But it's a really kind of touching and poignant little video as you follow this stuffed animal from mm-hmm. the streets of New York to the beach of L.A.
Yeah.
The song is Almost Home by my guest Moby.
So
is Almost Home from Moby's last record called Innocence. It's also Innocence, the name of the photo exhibition running here in New York through December 30th at the Emanuel Freeman Gallery on West 27th Street. And if there is a kind of narrative implied in this post-apocalyptic world,
mm-hmm.
is there an ending? I mean, is there a homecoming for anybody other than this little stuffed animal?
Well, this is my hope. And it's simply that for the last couple of thousand years, if not longer, we've been sort of ruled by fear. And the fear at one point made sense. To state the obvious, like a couple thousand years ago, we were afraid that, like, the neighboring tribe was going to kill us in our sleep, or some bears were going to eat us,
mm-hmm.
or who knows what. But now we're still afraid. And the only thing we have to be afraid of is each other, which is so irrational. And I really feel like...
Have you met some of those other people out there?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm saying it's a justified fear, but, like, it's elective.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, being afraid of a giant bear, that's not a choice. You know, like you should be afraid of the giant bear because it probably does want to eat your head. But being afraid of other people, like other people can choose not, like ISIS could choose to stop being terrorists. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's elective on their part.
Right.
And I feel like collectively as a species, we're hopefully going to wake up and realize that the problems we're dealing with are problems that we've created. And it's easily within our power to just stop being stupid, you know, stop creating problems for ourselves. And so to me, that's this transition is away from like irrational, fear-based approach to living to like a more sort of reason, empirically supported, less fearful way of approaching life.
So this is the apocalypse to sort of paraphrase Steve Reich, who wrote a famous book called Music as a Gradual Process.
Mm-hmm.
This is the apocalypse as a gradual process.
Yeah, the gradual unfolding of a hopefully less fearful apocalypse.
Now, while that gradual process is happening, though, you're still doing other things besides photography and mm-hmm. the last album. There's something coming out at the end of November.
Oh, so years ago, I put out this album called Hotel. And of all the albums I've made, it's probably the one I'm least interested in. But there was this weird bonus album that came out with it called Hotel Ambient. And it's just super quiet, Brian Eno-inspired ambient music, and no one really ever heard it. Clearly not a commercial smash, mm-hmm. considering there are no drums, no vocals, no singles. It's not really songs, just quiet ambient music. And I'm doing an ambient tour, and the whole tour is one show at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles, which is sort of like the Père Lachaise for rock stars and weird movie stars. But the other show is a fundraiser for the Integratron in Joshua Tree. And so the Integratron is this giant dome in the desert. And an astrophysicist in the 40s, I think, was visited by space aliens, so he claims.
Mm-hmm.
And the space aliens gave him the design to build the most acoustically perfect space. So he single-handedly built this giant white dome in the desert, and they do sound installations there. But it's kind of falling apart. Like, two lovely women from Brooklyn run it now, and they moved to Joshua Tree. And so I'm doing a fundraiser for the Integratron. So that's the entire tour is a Masonic temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery and the Integratron, which was designed by space aliens.
And does it have great acoustics? Have you been in it?
It has very unique acoustics. It's an entire...
That wasn't what I asked, though, was it?
It's a wooden dome. So, like, basically, if you put a rock band in there, it would not sound great.
Yeah.
But for long, slow, melodic music, it sounds... Because it's basically a giant wooden echo chamber.
And you're going to do this live?
The way we collectively understand live electronics, this will be live.
Okay. And then the album will be reissued.
The album will be reissued, and I expect roughly 5 people to potentially buy it.
All right. Sign me
maybe
up.
10, if I'm lucky. I mean, it is Christmas, so I'm like, maybe those 5 people buy 2.
Moby's been with us on Soundcheck. The exhibition of his photographs under the name Innocence runs at the Emanuel Freeman Gallery through December 30th. And Moby, always a pleasure to see you.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for having me.